You're listening to Around Comics, episode 185. From Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week our revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comics and comics culture. And Around Comics is recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by.
This episode is sponsored by InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. InStockTrades.com is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at great discounted prices. Right now, InStockTrades.com is offering the Invincible Iron Man Omnibus at an amazing 37% off the cover price. Pick up the earliest adventures of everyone's favorite Ironclad Avenger for only $62.99. You can pick from any of three variant covers. And remember that all orders over $50 ship for free.
You can pick all three variant covers.
You can pick all three if you really want to.
How come nobody...
$480.
Nobody interrupts him whenever he reads the spot.
They know better.
He's violent.
I'd hit him.
Slap somebody.
I show amazing restraint.
Please.
He's violent is why.
Hey there, folks.
He just sold his car for cash. Something only someone who's fishy does that. Yeah.
What do you want, a check for somebody to run off with your car?
Good point.
$100.
I sold the caddy, yeah. The caddy's gone. The Pitmobile is gone.
It's out of here.
Out of my hair.
Well, hey, folks, I'm Christopher Niesman. I'm your chief lion tamer for the Around Comics panel. Let's get you introduced to everyone. First of all, he's the man that you know is bringing the funny and the edutainment. He's also the host of Tom versus the JLA. He is, of course, Mr. Tom Caters.
Hello.
You know, I feel a little weird because you guys both have other podcasts that cheat on Around Comics.
I'm going to be done with this. The one
the JLA, you're quitting it. Yeah. Don't announce it, dude. Just do it. Don't announce it.
No, I'll finish. I'll get to like 260. Oh. Then
you got to start your Tom.
See in fall is it's summer, and I'm not sitting indoors recording that.
Tom versus the Legion.
The chow, yeah. Right? Yeah.
No,
I don't think that's going to be happening.
Yeah, speaking of, I've been sitting in with David Price and Vince B and now Wood on 11
Wood.
O'clock Comics.
What's his real name?
Who's Wood?
I think it's James.
Can we call him
James
Wood?
James Woods? No, I think just James Wood.
I feel weird.
Who the hell is
someone
Wood?
He's some guy that Vince and David drug out of some gutter.
People, how about a little standards in podcasting? You can't.
No,
just,
he was really good,
anybody.
But I feel odd referring to him as
Wood. Yeah. Like, I would have called him Woody.
It's like when people come up to you, it's like the same thing at conventions when people, you know.
Hey,
like,
Tom,
I want to know their actual name.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
hi, it's Darth Vader, 392.
I don't want to know, like, Princess Leia's master. You know, you can tell me your real name.
From here on out, I call him Woody. Because that
Woody.
That just works. Well, next is my partner in crime and making his triumphant Chicago return.
I was out of the state last time making my return. I am back for
the co-founder of Around Comics, Mr. Brian Salazar.
Hello.
Hi, and our special guest this week, who's sitting over here in dumbfounded amazement.
I don't think it's amazement. I think it's just shock.
Yeah. Shock.
Wow, these
scared.
Guys are
he is a contributing
stupid.
Writer at Tomorrow's Publishing. He is Mr. Eric Houston.
What's going on here?
He's thinking.
It's just getting started.
Eric,
this is
just
a terrible idea.
Just drink more.
Wow, I really wish this would have been a phone interview.
Yeah.
I think is what he's.
Why
going
am
through.
I here? Yeah. At a comic book store
on a Friday night.
Yeah,
in exactly. Chicago.
Welcome to Dark Tower Comics. Welcome to Around Comics. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
All right, great to have you here. Well, I tell you what. Let's get things rolling here. It's time for us to let everybody know what we've been reading the last couple weeks. It is time for Top of the Stack.
Top of the stack.
That's right. It's Top of the Stack. Our chance to let you, the listener, know what we, the panel, have been reading. And just quick warning that these reviews will be spoilerific. So if we ruin the fact that Brian Michael Bendis is a Skrull, you've been warned.
Skrulls can't write that bad.
Skrulls
love action.
I was just a joke. Skrulls like they're a little more aggressive than Brian's.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding, Mr. Bendis.
if you're listening.
Don't have me killed.
He's not listening.
No, he's not.
No. Okay, Mr. Caters, it's tradition. What is your top of the stack?
My top of the stack is Young Liars, issue number 3, from Vertigo. Or, as it should be said, David Lapham's.
Is it Wapham? Wapham?
David L.
Lapham.
Lapham? 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 I'll just mutter.
We can't hear you nod, Eric.
He stole my joke.
Oh.
David Ashton.
Okay, Chevy Chase.
I've enjoyed this series quite a bit so far. I mean, it follows sort of a sad sack kid named Danny who moves to New York and, like, sells his guitar and falls in love with this crazy girl. And that's sort of where the series started. And then the second issue explains why he's so sad and pathetic. And then the third issue, this one, the one that I picked as my top of the stack, shows how that pathetic behavior has led to the situation that he's in. It's a big ensemble cast of, like, him, this crazy girlfriend Sadie, who's got, like, a bullet in her brain, which makes her, like, an adrenaline junkie, so she is running around constantly and wanting to dance, and adds a little bit of humor to the... She's surprisingly funny in the book. You got a giant cross-dresser. you have, like, a smack addict. You have, like, an anorexic model. Got like this groupie, and it's a big crazy ensemble cast of people that aren't really terribly likable, but David Lampton does a good job of there's a lot packed into this issue, which I quite admire someone who jams more into an issue rather than stretches things out, because this one you got crazy axe-wielding street people, like, chopping people in the head. You got Danny shoots a doctor. You know, you have all kinds of crazy stuff going on. So, it was quite good. I don't want to give too much away of it, but...
I've got them. I haven't read them yet.
It's definitely got its own flavor to it. It's got its own... I mean, it's... If you've read, like, Stray Bullets, it's got that sort of taste.
I was going to ask you. I've never read it. Have you read Stray Bullets?
I have not. This is the first. I read the first two issues of this that I really, really liked. I had never read Stray Bullets, but for whatever reason, I didn't expect like the pure sort of crazy, chaotic action in this book.
It's like a little bit off from reality.
Yeah,
like
it's a little off kilter.
It's like it's reality based. Like people are in real places doing sort of real things, but then occasionally something really weird happens. And not weird like a unicorn shows up.
Right, like, not like completely
but someone does something really, you know,
strange,
crazy.
I mean,
one of the big things in this book that made the third issue so cool is that they tie together the fact that it's... spoilers. I'll just ignore. It's not that. Danny's the one that shot Sadie. That made her become the adrenaline junkie, which kind of made her change into somebody who's willing to hang out with him. You know, where he was sort of a stalker.
Right.
That she didn't really like.
Because she's this very attractive, very hip club girl. And, you know, everybody's in love with her. And she would normally...
Well, I should say it's implied that he shot her. Right. Then he's the one that shot her, and she doesn't really know that. And it changed her behavior so much that now they're sort of together. And the only way that happened is because of him shooting her.
Right. But at the same time, she's so... she's so kind of nuts and unpredictable that you know, even though that he's happy that they're together, it drives him crazy because she's like...
Well, there's a really cool scene where they're making a break for Spain because they're getting chased by... So they're on this boat, and he tells her that he loves her, and she goes, "I love you, Danny." And then there's like a beat, and she goes, "Did I say that right?" You know, because she doesn't feel anything, you know, but she feels like she should... say something, but she's so disconnected from everything.
He like has the relationship that he always wanted, but it's not the relationship that he always wanted. He's
always constantly in danger.
Yeah,
he's got to have a gun, so it's not a good situation. But I thought it was great because it was just like the right... It was kind of like with Sculpt, right? Kind of like the first two issues, and then I think it was like the third or fourth when they kind of the first issue of the first arc where they tied something together that was like, oh, okay,
right.
I kind of see where this is going. So seeing how the characters sort of tie together made it sort of click better for me, where in the first two I was like, okay.
A little lost.
It was good. I mean, it was good, but it didn't feel like there was a ton of overarching story going on. And right. Now I see that there's a reason for why all this stuff is sort of going on. So.
And Danny is the main character?
Yes.
Is he a Skrull?
No, he isn't. No, it's Vertigo. No.
Then I don't.
No one in the book was a Skrull, because a lot of people got shot and killed, and no one. Nobody turned into a Skrull. The doctor didn't.
It has made me want to go back and now start picking up Straight Bullets and read that.
I think it's cool because it's obviously such a singular. It's him. I mean,
right.
Oh, if I didn't mention that, he writes it and does all the art. Yeah. And
did you guys like Silverfish?
The insect?
It is an insect. It's also the name of a David graphic novel.
I'm just gonna go with Lapham.
Lapham. I think it's Lapham.
I'm just gonna go with Lapham.
I never got through it all the way. I was a little bored by it.
I enjoyed it. It read a little bit like a kind of like a USA movie of the week thriller. And everyone just goes crazy whenever they talk about his work on Stray Bullets. And
he runs kind of hot and cold for me. Mm-hmm. Just didn't he write Tales of the Unexpected? He wrote the lead story with the Spectre, and I thought that was kind of plain.
The Doctor 13 backups were
better.
Were the reason to
buy
that book.
But I think this is where his strength is. Mm-hmm. is Stray Bullets and something like this, where it's his
soul creation.
Yeah, his creation, his characters. He can go at his own.
Yeah, we were talking about Vince B on 11 O'Clock Comics, and he's a huge Lapham fan, and says, you know, Stray Bullets. Vince's taste, you know, those are very questionable.
There's
the
thing with the also the cool thing about the book is that there's still humor involved, even though the description of the cast would be fairly dire. Yeah, there's still like funny moments, like a disguised doctor who speaks with like a comical German accent, who is like, "Oh, everything is fine," and like it's coming in to kidnap Sadie. You know, like, that's sort of the example of, like, the weird little things.
His humor is definitely has a strange
it has a strange tilt to it. But it works because it's consistent. Like, the universe is consistent in the way that things happen and that unexpected stuff is going to happen all the time. So, I really liked it, and it's got a Guntar on the cover.
Okay.
A
what?
A Guntar.
It's a guitar with a gun.
Oh, no. It is a Guntar.
Yeah.
That's twice as sweet as a keytar.
Yeah, it's all way better. Keytar is lame.
Take that back.
Yeah.
Wait, back to Vince B for just a second.
Oh, God.
Vince is listening. No, I just was wondering. I was listening to 11 O'Clock Comics, and I was just wondering, you know, because now all of a sudden, and I don't know what happened to Vince, but why all of a sudden he hates Marvel Comics.
He only reads DC and Image.
He only picks one of the two.
What I'm wondering is, like, so all that time he spent, like, lauding Marvel's books, like, really awful ones that he applauded and you know, praised, was that all just BS then?
Why do you think Bullpen Bulletins went away?
I'm just wondering. What's the story?
He was tired of living the lie.
All right.
Okay,
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to go off on other
people. I want to hear more inner podcast gossip.
Oh, that's later. That's later. Okay. That's in the next one. We'll give you all the dirt then.
We'll explain
why Eric
really
is here.
Boring to have.
Yeah, I know. It's a bunch of sad people.
My top of the stack was a big surprise for me. I picked this up because I had seen it on the iFanboy Mini.
Oh, it's the Batman Confidential.
That Tom was on earlier this week. It is Batman Confidential number 17, and I think it was either you or Connor had talked about picking this up. Because
Connor picked it, and because I didn't even realize that Kevin McGuire did the art.
Absolutely. It's Fabian Nicieza is the writer.
Fabian Nicieza.
Pulled that one out. Kevin McGuire on art. All the regular other people, editors and associate editors, all that shit.
Yeah, we never.
I'm not as good as you are on Tom versus the JLA. You know,
all the names.
The dicks, you know, the fabulous dicks. This.
What are you talking about on that podcast? Oh, Jesus.
Porno / porn. It's J Tom versus J / porno.
X.
/ fiction.
What I loved about this book was one of the things that DC is doing and doing very well right now is that they're going back through either like year one stories or these confidential stories, and they're able to tell stories about heroes in their past and heroes that maybe aren't on the map anymore, like Batgirl. And this is a story about Batgirl's very early adventure. And just to kind of lay down the plot for you here real quickly, it's Barbara Gordon. She's 3 weeks removed from becoming Batgirl for the very first time, and she's at the Gotham City Library doing research, and she's studying notes from her father, Commissioner Gordon's notebook, and literally right from under her nose, the notebook is stolen, and she dons the Catwoman outfit and rushes out into the night to apprehend who's stolen this notebook. Well, it's Selina Kyle, Catwoman, and that begins what is one of the best comic book chase scenes that I've read in recent memory. And almost probably 80% of the book is Batgirl chasing Catwoman through Gotham and mostly
the rooftops
over
and
the rooftops and alleys of Gotham. What a as the chase scene progresses, there's one double page spread in particular that really stopped me as I was reading it. And it's this thing that you can really only do in comics. And it is this just masterfully bordered two-page spread that has a silhouette of Batgirl and Catwoman scampering over the rooftops, and then all of the panel art is contained within those borders. And I'll show the panel here. Very cool, huh?
Yeah,
that's very nifty. Nice.
I mean, that's a comic book convention that you don't see in other things. And there's a lot of inner dialogue between Batgirl and Catwoman, as this is really, and I think
dueling inner monologues. I would say dueling. They're not talking to each other.
Exactly. Hence, inner
description.
Very literary.
And I think it's very much an intended pun that this is a cat and mouse game with Catwoman.
Cat and bat.
The old wives' tale about a cat and a bat.
Batgirl is very new in her career as
three
a hero.
3 weeks, right? Didn't it say something like 3 weeks? Like,
that's what he said earlier.
Oh, did he? I'm sorry.
Yeah,
he never listens. He never listens to me.
I was trying to get ready for my topic. I'm sorry.
See, I know he tunes me out.
What'd you pick again?
Well, I knew what he was talking about.
Yeah, Batman was good, huh?
But, you know, Selina Kyle is more of a veteran on the scene, and she's, you know, definitely has more experience and is really playing, you know, cat and mouse with you know, she doesn't even know about Batgirl at this point. She even asks her at the beginning of this fight if she's a Batman groupie. Which was
Pet.
Great. And then continues to just kick her butt all over this rooftop. And as the story progresses, you have this Barbara Gordon in her, you know, naivete, her enthusiasm as a new hero, in Catwoman's perspective, goes from being, you know, cute to maybe gaining a little bit of respect to being annoying and a nuisance in her tenacity. And the story wraps up that Catwoman kind of smuggles her way into a hedonist club in Gotham. And this is where the book kind of takes an interesting turn that we'll see how they work out of it. And Batgirl has to make this decision of if she's going to follow Catwoman into this hedonist club in the buff, which is the only way that she can get in. But
your beach towels.
I thought it was
I'm
great.
Sold.
Yeah.
It was great characterization.
Get ready.
You really get this feeling of Batgirl being
Batgirl.
You know, you get this great feeling that Batgirl is very inexperienced and really wanting to prove herself for the first time, and that Catwoman really has this great amount of experience and has been around and knows what she's doing. But I tell you what, Kevin Maguire's art, nobody draws that moment of absurdity or confusion like Kevin Maguire.
Because he draws faces.
Yes, he does.
Faces, actual faces.
Faces that change, you know.
That express emotion.
Move,
That don't look like
stone
magazine covers. Exactly. People's mouths open when they talk.
And yeah, and it's almost awkward. But you know what? It's like those pictures that you take of people whenever they're doing things, and it's like not everyone looks like they're posed whenever they're just doing stuff. That's what McGuire's art looks like, and I respect that, and I really, really enjoyed
it. It's like acting. You know, when you're on stage, you gotta make big face. You gotta make, because you're not a foot away from them, so you have to make big gestures. In comic books, they're not really moving, so you have to do something.
Play it up a little.
Yeah, you gotta play it up a little bit to make sure. I mean, there's no confusion about, you know, there isn't a single time in this issue where Batgirl is angry, but her face looks like her mouth is closed and she's just staring straight ahead. You know, that doesn't happen in the McGuire art, which is great, because I'm like, no one can draw like six panels of people talking and have it look really cool.
Yeah.
Like where you actually are like, oh, I want to see more panels of people's faces.
Well, there's like a three-panel progression of Batgirl at one point where she's intense and then absolutely dumbfounded and perplexed and then resolute in what she's going to do. And there were no, you know, dialogue burst nothing was needed to tell that part of the story except for what her expression was. And Kevin McGuire shows why he is such a great artist.
Yeah, I wish he did more.
Yeah.
Well, then when this is done, I'll be like,
and he's great at that, too, the progression of faces. I mean, there's in one of the JLA 80-page giants from, like, 2000 or 2001, there's a JLI story where Beetle and Booster are trying to catch a mouse, and I think in that story there's this great, like, six or nine panels of Beetle watching Booster trying to catch the mouse, and you can tell what's going on off-page just from Ted Kord's expressions.
That's awesome. So, Batman Confidential, if you haven't been picking it up before now, 17 was the beginning of this new Cat and me either.
Don't need to with these. That's the cool thing about it.
I think this is going to be a five-part story. Superman Confidential, I've enjoyed from the beginning. Haven't been reading Batman Confidential,
I might start. Those books always depend on the creator or if it's like a character.
Sure.
Yeah.
Like JSA Classified, JLA Classified.
It's a character.
It's
like
nice
because
you can pick
it up.
Choose, yeah.
Of course, that also means that people drop it really easy because they're like, I don't want to change an artist every four issues. cry me a river.
Boo, boo, boo. Right.
Whoever would like to go next?
Eric?
All right.
Go ahead.
Sal likes to go last so he can...
draw.
Have the last, word.
No, so you can like, trump everyone.
Yeah, no. I
picked Watchmen.
I lied. I picked this.
I'm kind of behind, so I picked from a few weeks ago Glamour Puss number one.
Really?
By Dave. Yeah.
All right. I read it. I just want to hear what you have to say. That's all. No, I'm not. I just
explain yourself.
No, I
really. Wow.
Really?
Right now,
no, I'm not
gonna.
I have nothing to say about it. I just want to know what you have to say about it. That's the point.
Well, I liked it so much because it wasn't at all what I expected it to be. Like, I didn't know a whole lot about it going in. I knew that it was Dave Sims' new book after Cerebus. And I knew that it was going to be dealing with kind of a fashion magazine parody and, you know, women in that sort of scenario, but I didn't know anything else about it. And to be frank, I was really worried that it was going to be... Like, I know that Dave Sim has a reputation for being a misogynist.
What?
No.
No.
Yeah, well, it's...
I'm shocked.
You need to...
Where can I find out about this?
Wikipedia.
Where can I learn more?
Where can I learn more about this misogyny?
It'd be a great supervillain. Misogyny.
He's a good villain.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Look out! It's misogyny!
At any rate. So I thought I would hate the book based on that, but I ordered it anyway because, you know, on
you
the strength
Dave
of Cerebus. Or Cerebus, or whatever the hell it's called.
Yeah. Cerebellum.
That's right. Yeah. So I picked this up, and it's not... It's like I say, it's not what I expected at all, because I was expecting a very plot-driven book about kind of stupid models in an agency where you would read it and you would say, clearly this guy hates women. But it boils down to being him experimenting with the photorealistic style that guys like Al Williamson and Alex Raymond used to do really, really well, and both of whom I'm big fans of. And it's just him drawing those pictures, and in some cases just downright lightbox tracing those images. And in the dialogue boxes, then talking about what he's doing and his appreciation for that kind of art and why he's doing it and why he thinks it should come back. So it ends up being this treatise on a style of art that's told in a different way and just, like I say, not at all what I was expecting.
And the last panel wasn't him going, also, I hate women. In case you get confused.
I
am a misogynist.
That's the back cover.
Oh, yeah. I'm a misogynist.
By the way, yeah,
I'm a misogynist.
Just for Tom's information.
Just to clear things up,
I thought
I'm
the
misogynist.
Art was fantastic in it, myself, but...
Well, it kind of looks like it is. It looks like an artistic exercise. Yeah, it looks like an exercise.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, he's exploring. Well, I don't know if it's an exercise.
Exploration more than exercise.
It made me think.
Really?
I like to use my brain
and
muscle.
Feel.
Why? The only thing I
think and feel and hurts. It'd be better on a video show.
Yeah,
you could see what I was doing.
Eric, this isn't that type of show. Couldn't you have done like Green Lantern? Come on.
Green Lantern was great. I didn't think we needed another secret origin, but I've been proven wrong.
We haven't beat up a guest like this in a long time.
It's fun.
Boy,
we got to get to him before he gets to us, because who knows? You know,
absolutely.
He's going to go back and...
We're sad, because we're sad. Sad bastards is our problem.
I just want to be loved, guys.
You will.
Hey,
you are.
Every show now ends with a group hug. So
okay,
worry.
Good. So. Good.
No, I'm glad. I'm glad he picked it. Cause now I have a bigger appreciation for it.
I got it.
I think he's
serious.
Yeah.
I'm not joking.
No, that's a good explanation of why.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
You.
I didn't get.
I read
that
a lot of reviews that didn't tell me a single thing actually about.
No, it was all bitching about Dave Sim. And
it was all like, he's a misogynist.
He's an idiot. He's psychotic. It wasn't anything about the book.
I didn't even know what it was. I knew he was doing like the Alex Raymond stuff, but no one had actually
Well, and even the way he explains it to the press has been, I want to do a book about cute teenage girls in my best Al Williamson style, which, again, makes you think that it's going to be the sort of book you would think it would be, and it's just not that at all.
There's no real story to it at all.
No,
it's
and
not,
there's,
it's not,
there's this part in the middle where he attempts a narrative, sort of, but it never really goes anywhere.
Yeah.
And it's only like two pages, and then he's right back to talking
Has he turned into a guy that, I mean, he's a very polarizing creator. Is he a guy that has become a creator that it's near impossible to separate the creator from the work now?
Well, if you're even aware of him, I mean...
Yeah.
I think it's tough only for the fact that... And this, it's not a bad thing about him, is that he sort of fields it in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
he doesn't shy away from it at all.
He doesn't separate it himself, I think.
Yeah.
He doesn't, like...
He puts it out there,
this
is what I believe.
Yeah, to his own...
This is what I think.
Whether it's to his help or detriment, I don't know, but that's definitely the way he... I don't think he keeps them separate.
I don't think anyone else can either. I'd like to get, like, he and John Byrne together for coffee, you know?
Byrne doesn't drink coffee. He's full of energy all the time.
All right.
To answer what you're talking about, I think about Dave Sim a lot the same way I think about Roman Polanski. I like a lot of his output, but morally he's kind of reprehensible.
Yeah, a little bit. You're like, I don't know if I agree with.
I don't know if I agree with statutory rape, but I really like Rosemary's Baby.
It's really tough for him because anytime he does anything. You know,
it was part of his work in a way too.
I mean, it wasn't like he was doing Green Lantern and then on the side was being a misogynist. You know, like the whole misogyny thing came out of the, like, people got that feeling out of the work
right,
itself.
Yeah.
So that makes it even harder.
That was Gil Kane.
He was writing.
He had a zine on the side that he was doing. Oh, I'm doing Green Lantern. And I also have a misogyny magazine called I Hate Women. Separate though. You can
order it through the mail only. There's no real distribution service for it other than me.
That, people got that feeling from him out of the actual book.
Right.
So,
what he is most famous for is A, the work, and then B, what the work has made people think about him.
I think the Polanski is a perfect example of that. Comparison.
I'm trying to be nice to the guest.
I just don't
want to...
I'm not trying to apologize for Dave Sim or anything.
No.
I don't think that.
I just don't want to call him a child rapist. Is all.
Yeah.
A little touchy there, but that's all right.
I was more in the way of separating the creator from
right,
creating.
Right.
You know, separating the creator.
I wasn't trying
from
to compare the offenses.
No, I know. I'm just, All right.
I love you, Dave Sim.
like Roman Polanski loves small
Osama
girls.
Bin Laden's leading terrorist, but on the side, he does a webcomic. Totally separate, though. You can love the webcomic and not hate him for the terrorism.
And that webcomic is hilarious.
Oh, it's great. It's about a dog and a cat who are stuck in a box. It's awesome.
He's the new writer of Family Circus.
All right. My top of the stack, you said.
It's called Furbox. Look it up. Furbox.com.
Oh, Jesus.
We're back. Welcome to Around Comics.
I'd like to say hi to my mom.
You did a great Peanuts parody.
No. Yep. Don't go there.
Oh, yeah. Like, it could be worse than Furbox.
I guarantee Charles Schultz isn't listening, so we don't know.
Oh,
Sal.
All right.
Rescue us.
My top of the stack is Guardians of the Galaxy number 1, written by Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning, and penciled by Paul Pelletier.
Yeah. I think that's right.
Who's quickly becoming one of my favorite superhero artists out there.
I loved his run
on Fantastic Four. That was great. He's good. And yeah, he's just flat out good.
He draws good explosions.
Yeah. This is basically a book that came out of Annihilation, blah blah blah.
One of the Annihilation
stories.
Conquest?
Was it Conquest?
I think it was the last one that was.
I think they're all linked.
Yeah,
you know what? I didn't read.
I guess this actually, because you have Drax. Well, anyway, I'll just tell
whatever.
Go. Whatever. Anyway.
Hey, tell
basically,
me about
it's about about Star-Lord, who was an old Marvel cosmic character that was kind of a joke, and then they made him kill a bunch of like a billion people and. He's come back, and in the Annihilation story, he was unwittingly put into the position of leading a team of heroes to battle the Phalanx.
Yes,
who took over the Kree homeworld, and they had to go out and try and stop this and everything. And his team was put together of various misfits, including Rocket Raccoon, this tree character creature like a tree
twig.
Well, now he's a twig. Mantis and a couple other characters that Captain Universe,
Space Cabby from DC.
No, not Space Cabby. But anyway, this follows that all up, and now Star-Lord has decided that the universe needs a group of protectors, and so he puts together this team with some of the members from the previous team, Rocket Raccoon, who's quickly becoming my favorite Marvel character. And then Drax the Destroyer, he gets on board, and Gamora, who is, I don't even know who she is. But,
I don't know either.
Isn't she related to Drax?
She's Randy.
Yeah, I think she's related.
She's bawdy.
And she's in love with Nova, and
but
she's a villain.
But she's had a relationship with Adam Warlock in the
past. And Adam Warlock's in the team.
You know, we need Darth Kramer from the forum here, because he is Mr. Marvel Cosmic.
Yeah,
he would know all of this stuff.
I haven't really read that much Marvel Cosmic stuff, so I've been surprised that I liked the Annihilation Conquest, and I really like this book. But so this first story is basically their first adventure together as protectors of the universe, or guardians of the galaxy. And
They're almost like a special strike force.
Yeah, as the story goes along, it's intercut with these debriefings that are supposed to have happened after the fact of the first adventure of each of the team members. So as the story goes on, you have the team members cutting in and saying, you know, what they were thinking beforehand, why they joined the team. And it's very much a jokey kind of book. It was very funny and a lot of laughs and stuff. But really good action I can't even really say why I liked it so much other than it was just funny and fun and great art and it tied together all the stuff that from Annihilation Conquest. Easily for me the best thing to come out of that whole Annihilation debacle that Marvel put on for the last 2 years.
I read it. Didn't read Annihilation. I need to go back and read it because I've heard a lot of people that have enjoyed it. I didn't need to read it. It set it up fine.
I have never read anything with any of these characters in it, ever. Like, none of them. I've never read a Nova comic. I've never read any Star-Lord comics.
Right,
I used to read Star-Lord.
I've heard that Starlin's run on Warlock is one of the high holy runs.
I just
runs,
never liked the
know?
Marvel.
I never did.
I've never
been a cosmic comic reader, really, but I've really liked this gang.
We've become cosmic comic book readers, though.
Absolutely.
We made together.
I know, with
Mystery in Space.
Mystery in Space.
Yeah, I've really
this and
GL.
Yeah. Also, Quasar's in the group. Adam Warlock. So it's Star-Lord, Quasar, Adam Warlock, Rocket Raccoon, Gamora, yeah, and Drax. And in this book, also, Nova is in it, sort of helping them get the team together and then giving them a place to have their headquarters.
The coolest headquarters ever, because it is a headquarters.
It is the severed head of a celestial floating next to a sort of cosmic...
It's like in a fissure. Nexus.
Yeah, fissure. Yeah,
conveniently. One of those things so you can get anywhere.
Well, the funny thing is if you're reading Nova, that came from an arc in Nova where he was trapped in that head in one arc and met the dog that runs it and all the people.
Oh, yeah, there's
there.
A Soviet dog.
Yeah, the Soviet space dog that somehow is a telepathic and...
Telekinetic
and can speak English.
Cosmic books are all about talking dogs.
Absolutely. Hey, there's nothing better than a Russian space dog that talks.
What about this dog?
That's all I need.
Tyrone.
Yeah, Tyrone's awesome.
Oh, from Mystery
dog.
In Space is my favorite.
Enough of the dog talk.
The story itself is you know, it's they're going to stop this cosmic cult from blowing their ship up in a black hole or something.
A fissure in the fabric of space.
Yeah, the story doesn't even matter. It's just getting the band together and going forward. But, I mean, it was very... Is my time up? I'm sorry. Did I go long?
Yeah.
But it is very much a jokey book. There's a lot of funny things in it. Probably my favorite... I'm gonna do it right now is they're trying to figure out a name for the team and everybody keeps coming up with different names and Rocket Raccoon comes up with Ass Kickers of the Fantastic. Star-Lord says no and he goes, how about Rocket Raccoon and his human hangers on? And then Drax comes in and says, how about Drax and his coonskin hat? That grab you? Which I just thought was a great little panel. That was one panel. So I mean, it's very, very funny and sort of Dirty Dozen-y kind of.
Well, they
know,
also
Dirty
have
Dozen
great
space.
Little sequences of Star Lord or Richard Rider going up to all the characters and
asking them to join. Yeah.
So you know a little bit about each.
Drax
one
the
of
Destroyer
them.
For the first time ever probably has a personality in a book. Mm-hmm. These characters you learn a little bit. He's very heartbroken because Moondragon died. Spoilers, if no one knew.
I didn't know.
Moondragon had died in
She'll
Quasar.
Be back. She was a Skrull.
Yeah, probably. And so there's a moment with him and Quasar, because Quasar and Moondragon were lovers, I believe. And
That girl got around.
Quasar?
No, Moondragon.
Oh.
I don't know any of these people.
I'm
out of my
She's a trisexual.
You'll learn about it whenever you do Tom
but overall,
versus
I mean,
the Defenders.
It was just fantastic art, funny book, good story, and cool space shit blowing up and...
You know, I've decided that I'm
explosions,
Cthulhu-like monster.
Cthulhu, and weird floating giant celestial heads in space and talking dogs. What more do you want?
I've decided that if I were a Marvel character, I would be Rocket Raccoon because I'm short, stocky, furry, and I like to drink.
I'm thinking Foggy Nelson.
Thanks, Tom.
Yeah, Rocket Raccoon's way too cool.
He's like awesome
for you. I'm sorry.
Do these guys report to anybody, or is it just
no? It's just them. It's just Star Lord putting it together and deciding.
I like kind of the implication that they're like when Richard Rider's like, oh, Nova Corps. Can't do anything. There aren't any. You know,
yeah.
Like,
it's like, I don't really have time to put the Nova Corps together. Yeah. But I'll help you out with a cool floating headquarters.
And there's a nice twist at the end where you find out that one of them is going to betray.
Yes.
Yeah, Mantis, the clairvoyant that can see into the future has already.
What a great seed by Abnett and Lanning to put in there. Because as I'm reading, it's like, okay, first issue, I'm really enjoying it. And they're like, in 9 months, you know, someone from the team will betray them and kill them. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm hooked for 9 months now.
Well, what if you open up the next issue and it says 9 months later and someone betrays them almost immediately?
Well, that would be stupid. That would not be the best way.
It depends on if they cancel the book in 3 months. Then
yeah,
that'll
so
happen. It'll be
yeah,
short.
Fast.
Yeah. Hopefully they won't. But I really liked it, and like I said, I haven't really liked any of the Annihilation stuff, and this came out of it, and easily the best.
It was good. I'm gonna get the next
one. Mark Beatty isn't at the shop tonight. Charles is filling in for him, and
he's serving beer.
Yeah, he's like acting like we have our own personal bartender here.
I'm gonna have to leave him a little song.
Do you have a tip jar up at the counter?
The Avengers Mansion or whatever that is. What is it, Jeeves?
Jarvis. God, DC guy, what's up with you? Jesus.
He wouldn't use Alfred
then.
I
knew there was a butler.
Everyone has a butler in comic books, even poor people. They all have somebody.
All right, well, that'll take care of our comic book top of the stack, but I have an audio top of the stack this week.
Good God.
Oh, no. Come on. This is the perfect lead out. We met Andy Kuhn at the Seattle Comic Con. Andy Kuhn is, you may know him from his work on Fire Breather with Phil Hester, which is coming back, and I think we're going to talk to Andy.
Ultimate X-Men.
He did some What If or Marvel Team Up work.
He's in a great band.
And he is in a band called the Fugglies, and they released an album, I believe, back in 2003, which Andy gave us a copy of in Seattle, and it's called Indiana is the name of the record. And you know, it's like, okay, he's giving me a CD. It's like, okay, what's the? I get back to Chicago, and I've been jamming out to it. If you're a fan of like Weezer
the Coon rocks,
riding down Lake Street,
Indiana,
going through West Ghetto of Chicago.
Yeah.
But if you're a fan of Weezer or like Fountains of Wayne, I think you really like this. But we'll leave top of the stack here and roll into a little ditty called Japanimation Eyes.
No.
So here you go. Here's Andy Kuhn as bassist and backing
Spin
vocals
that.
With
the Wheels of Steel
with the Fugglies.
Sucker in the room, takes him by the hand and she leads a sucker to his doom. Somebody's gonna get it and nobody knows who it'll be. Sounds like fun, but I think I better run, cause she's pointing them both right at me. And she's got Japan.
All right, there you go. There's a little Fugglies for you. For just Google Fugglies.
Frozen peas.
Yeah, we had a little Orson Welles.
How do you emphasize Fug and Fugly? Doesn't make any sense.
It's ridiculous.
Bring me a jury.
You can't start a sentence in the English language and Fug.
It doesn't make any sense. You can start one. Fugly.
You're gonna make me put that sound clip in later, aren't you?
Maybe.
Let me end the episode with that. All right. Well, hey, little chance here to talk to one of our buddies, Mr.
Friends.
Friends of the program.
Buddies are for children.
Yes.
Friends of the program.
My buddy.
I am a child.
Hey, buddy. My buddy.
One of the friends of the program, Mr. Steve Bryant.
You better answer the phone this time.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How you doing, buddy?
Not too bad.
Yeah? Well, we're just calling.
Yeah?
Yeah. What are you doing at home on a Friday night, besides waiting for us?
I'm on dad duty.
Oh.
That's D-U-T-Y, not D-O-O-D-I-E.
What?
Is it your is
He's
it
talking
your
about
children?
Poop.
Is it your children? You haven't kidnapped a child, have you?
You didn't find a child on the street and bring it home.
You didn't kidnap a child, did you, Steve? It is your children, right?
It is my son. Yes, it is. apparently, children are very, very aware of being lured or something. I heard that on The Office. So there you go.
Well, hey, the reason we're calling you up is that I heard a little rumor that you're working on Athena Volterra again.
Yeah, we've got a trade paperback collection of the first miniseries, Flight of the Falcon, solicited in the latest issue of Previews. Man, it's been a bear. We've been away for about 18 months now. Pretty much the long and short of it is, without giving, too much backstory, Paul Bailey and I had a bit of a falling out. Paul was the writer on the book. We just spent the last 18 months trying to figure out what to do or if the property was going to survive, how much we could speak about it, which we didn't really go into it a whole lot publicly because we had lawyers involved. But we've reached an agreement, and we're parting amicably, so we're releasing the collection of our last collaboration, and I'll be following it up with kind of a relaunch at the end of this year, early next year.
Did you at any point consider having a knife fight? Like Beat It style?
No. Paul kept wanting to do something. He kept referencing Jets and Sharks and Dance Off, but that just kind of frightened me.
Yeah, there's no legal precedent for that. No, that would never hold up in a court of law, whoever lost.
Well, Tom and I want to know, you know, the big question is, are we going to...
what do I want to know?
Well, you want to know this.
I'm interested to see where this is going.
The big question is, are we going to make our debut in Athena Volterra? Because we did some photo reference work for you.
Yes. You guys will show up in one way, shape, or form. I promise you that.
You made me take my top off, Steve. I want
those
to
are
see
for the archive only.
Those are for the private collection.
Those are my private pictures, Tom. Those are my private pictures.
You do that.
Are you gonna? Are you gonna make good on your promise and make me taller than Tom?
Did I promise that?
It can't be
done.
It's impossible.
It's impossible.
Yeah, I drink it. Jeez.
Yeah.
I'm amazed at what you were able to get these guys to do for a grilled cheese sandwich and a six-pack. It's scary.
Well, and the sad thing was, it was the fat-free cheese on the grilled cheese sandwich, and we used I Can't Believe It's Not Butter. So,
and it wasn't
hot.
It
was really easy.
It wasn't grilled. The grilled was in quotation marks. It wasn't grilled.
Just a cheese
just
sandwich.
Just sandwich.
Yeah, just a cheese sandwich.
And the beer was root beer.
Well, look, I offered the, you know, to put it on the ironing board and grill it up, but you said no.
No.
I'm a professional, sir.
So who's going to be writing it? Are you going to be writing it now, or you have someone else?
I'll be writing and drawing it. So, you know, direct all hate letters at me. But I've been really enjoying working on it, and I think it's starting to come together. So I'm really enjoying it. I'll just say that much.
Real quick, for folks out there that have not read Athena Volterra, maybe not familiar with the project, which if you've listened to Around Comics for any amount of time, I can't imagine. Can you give people a quick breakdown of what Athena Volterra is? Who Athena Volterra is?
The Hollywood high concept would just be Indiana Jones starring a James Cameron style female pilot. You know, a slightly longer explanation is, you know, she's a 1930s aviatrix fighting, you know, Nazis and the occult as World War II kind of looms on the horizon. It's in the mid-30s. So, you know, America's not involved in the war yet. It's kind of that same era that, like, Milt Caniff did Cherry and the Pirates. So it's a lot of fun stuff like that.
All right. Well, speaking of Indiana Jones, you looking forward to the new movie?
Oh, man, is this the best summer for geek movies ever?
It's up there. It's off to a heck of a start, that's for sure.
Holy cow. Well, probably Indy and Hellboy are the two that I'm most looking forward to.
Hellboy looks really good. It looks like they just kind of pulled out all the stops, and Del Toro is just kind of going with whatever wacky, crazy, monster, demon insanity that he can come up with.
It's like Del Toro's gone completely batshit crazy, and I welcome it. You know, bring it on.
Hey, going back to Athena Volterra, I never talked to you about this before. I was wondering if you had ever read the book Pancho Barnes and the Happy Bottom Writing Club.
What?
I had been familiar with Pancho Barnes, and that was part of Paul's contribution, was kind of basing her off of Pancho Barnes, you know, without the brothel. The Happy Bottom Writing Club, that was her brothel, right?
Well, it was the bar on the Edwards Air Force Base that all the pilots would hang out. That was later on in her life when she was a bit older, and she ran that bar right off the base there, and all the pilots would show up. And you've seen it in, you know, in like New Frontier, Right Stuff. Yeah, that's all based on that bar. But the book's really fast. She's a really fascinating woman. Because younger, you know, in her younger years, she was quite, you know, quite the pilot and kind of revolutionary in her looks at things, and she's a real tough-nosed lady. But I highly recommend it. I would think it would be something you'd be interested in considering.
Oh yeah, check it out.
Sal's doing this now with all the guests. He recommends each one of them a book.
Well, no, I just
on,
no, I knew that.
Hey, I'm
I
mean, fine.
I knew
I'm
that.
Fine with
I,
it.
Knew
I
that,
don't care.
You know, the aviatrix thing, and I, Pancho obviously just fits in there, and I just didn't know if Steve had ever read the book.
It's okay.
Gee. Oh, Sal, you're like the Phil Jackson of comics.
Yeah,
yeah, give everyone
you know,
a book.
Yeah, you know, reading is power. Knowledge is power, Tom.
You're right.
So
you're right, and I'm wrong.
Thank you.
Yes.
That's what Sal was doing on the hiatus. He was at a monastery reading.
No, I was. It's just a.
Well, you think you're so smart because you read books?
Yes.
I believe someone on the show coined the term big boy book.
Big boy.
It is a big boy
book. I know I'm right because my heart tells me so. I don't need a book to tell me facts.
All right. Well, Steve, real quick before we let you go, all the information that people need to know about Athena Voltaire's return as far as like previews and all that good stuff, street dates, et cetera.
It is in the latest issue of, you know, Diamond Catalog previews. In the eighth section, that's, you know, after the main, you know, the premier publishers or whatever it's called. Gosh, I don't know the Diamond Code off the top of my head, but... check it out. Who's sponsoring the show tonight?
InStockTrades.com.
I bet a fine retailer like Dark Tower probably can order the book for you. And if you don't have...
Beatty's not here, so we can mention DCBS.
Okay. Your lovely sponsor, InStock Trades, has a sister company called DCBService.com, DCBS.com, and they're offering... Flight of the Falcon, the trade paperback that we're soliciting this month for 50% off. So it's $8.87.
Nice.
Outstanding.
It's a good deal.
All
right. Hell of a deal.
Well, Mr. Bryant, it is always a pleasure to talk with you. Are you gonna promise to try and make it up to Chicago this summer or early fall and actually sit in with us so we don't have to call you?
That would be wonderful. And plus, I'm sure I'll see you guys in about 6 weeks at Wizard Chicago, right?
Absolutely.
We'll be there. Yes.
Awesome. I'm glad you guys are back.
Hey, it's good to be back.
I'm okay with it. It's starting to lose.
It's starting to get on me a little bit. I don't know. We'll see how long
it
lasts.
I'm so tired already.
All right, brother. We will talk to you later, all right?
Awesome. Have a good night, guys.
All right. You
see you, Steve.
Too.
I like it when you say bye-bye. Brother. Sounds brother. Like you're like a wrestler.
Listen, hey, brother.
Hey, listen, brother. Brother.
Listen up, brother. I want you to read this book.
I'm following Ultimate Warrior on Twitter.
Oh,
yes,
really?
Yeah.
What is the I gotta link on
I don't
that.
Know. I'm weird. I don't want to respond to anything he says because I really don't want his attention.
Yeah, you don't want
I'm afraid he'll
You don't want him to get you in his crosshairs, man.
Oh yeah. The funny thing is I added him and he added me I don't know, maybe 3 seconds later, which is sort of creepy. Like
he's got some spare time.
He's got a great new website called ultimatewarrior.com.
You know, I was listening to your Tom versus the JLA back about issue 170 or so with Ultra, the Ultimate Warrior. That was good stuff. That was good stuff.
When the fires of heaven come down upon you on Twitter.
On Twitter. All right, well,
Twitter your ass off.
I tell you, we have an actual guest here who's much more respectable than us, I guess.
Oh, that's not hard.
He like does like hardcore journalism.
Hardcore
comic book journalism.
Yes. Softcore journalism.
Softcore is what I like.
Eric, why don't you take a minute and let us know what you do for the fine folks over at Tomorrow's Publishing.
Tomorrow's.
Well, you guys sit around and talk about Dr. Doom.
Mm.
And I sit around and write about Dr. Doom.
You complete fool.
And you
tell me about it.
The difference is you get paid, don't
you?
I do.
That's the thing we fucked up on.
Damn it.
No, but mostly I write for Back Issue Magazine for editor Michael Urey. I wrote articles for the February and April issues, which you should still be able to pick up. And I'm working on a book project right now that I'll probably be able to talk about in a couple of months a little more, and that kind of a thing.
All right.
What got you into... writing for Back Issue and writing about comic book history and interviews, that kind of stuff?
Really just reading Back Issue. I started, you know, I saw it at my comic store and started picking it up, and I thought it was a really well done, really in-depth magazine. Mm-hmm. And I had always kind of wanted to try writing for a magazine or writing for something like that. And the problem is, like, if you visit the DC website, unless you're an artist, you can't submit your stuff, really. I think DC for a long time was allowing Vertigo pitches.
One time. And
yeah, but like Marvel wasn't really accepting any. It was hard to get anything to them.
Sure.
And, you know, I think I tried once or twice, but not to any sort of success, because they were really bad pitches.
This is honest.
Yeah. It
doesn't help.
No. But if you look at the back of Back Issue, there's a little square in the ad section that says that you can send an email to editor Michael Urey and ask for a writer's Bible, and he'll send it to you. And From there, you just pitch articles, and if he likes them, he asks you to write it.
Did you have to swear on the writer's Bible?
No.
That's what it was.
Sometimes I do when it's late at night and I'm trying to, get a piece about Airboy out.
Sometimes he swears at the writer's Bible.
So they just have you. You can submit any kind of pitch to them or whatever, and then.
Well, like I say, it's the best thing to do is to start by writing Michael Urien. I think his email is in there, and request a writer's Bible or writer's guidelines. And my guess is he'll send them to you, and then after that, he'll send you an email with the topic of the latest issue. I don't know how much you guys read back issue, but each one has kind of a vague topic, like comic book royalty or spies and tough guys. And if you have a pitch that fits that, you send him an email. And it's kind of, it's pretty competitive. He's got a stable of a bunch of guys who he sends these emails to. And some articles, and you would be surprised sometimes at the articles that get a lot of requests in for. But yeah, you just go ahead and you send, either based on what he's asking for or something you've come up yourself that you think would fit the topic. And, you know, if he likes it, then he'll give you a word count and you just go for it.
Do you think you could do a complete, comprehensive overview of the Legion so people will quit asking us to do it?
We have there is the Legion Companion for Two Mars, which is really sweet. Excellent. Yeah. I had nothing to do with it.
Can we just read it on?
Read it on. I think there's copyright issues.
Oh, crap. All right. Well,
if you credit them,
we're gonna find someone to do a Legion 101 for us if it
I've
kills
had people
us.
Volunteer.
Really?
Excuse me.
Yeah, but they all have high-pitched squeaky voices.
Hi!
Hi!
Legion started out in 19...
Lightning Lad came onto the scene.
Hey, so what have you written at this point for...
At this point, I've written two articles for Back Issue. I wrote one about Airboy, the Eclipse series from the 80s.
Ooh, that's some Chuck Dixon goodness,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. Got to talk to Chuck Dixon and doing it, so that was
nice.
Really cool.
Airboy.
That was a good comic.
That was an excellent series, and it's a book that you can easily find in, like, 50-cent bins.
Name the editor.
Well, it started out as Tim Truman, and then the second half of the series was edited by Cat Ironwood.
Oh, that's right. Nice. Fuck you, Chris.
It's
wrote the
it's
article.
It's almost as if I wrote an article.
Yeah.
Yeah, and how long did it take you to find out that that's how you said Cat Ironwood's name? Because it does not look like that.
It was kind of my working theory, and then I called her to interview her for the article. And
she's an interesting lady.
And I said, so, Uranwood? And then she hung up, and I called back.
The Legion article.
Now do it right.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, not at all. And then I did an article in the next issue about Dr. Doom and Latveria.
Doom.
Tom knows Doom.
A regular guest on your show.
Yes, Doom is on often. I'm surprised you don't get access to Doom.
Doom should do your Legion.
Yeah,
Doom thinks the Legion is stupid, and therefore I am not going to do it.
They spend all their time tricking each other with horrible pranks.
I like Pharaoh Lad a lot. I can't say why.
I don't know why. Legion blows.
Just get over it.
And talk about issue. We really haven't talked about back issue that much. It is really one of the great magazines out there. If you want to dig deeper into comics history, it is it's a fantastic publication. And Tomorrow's has several titles that are all well worth the money and time that you would spend reading them.
Right, and I kind of feel like my feeling toward it has always been that I read Wizard when I first got into comics and was coming up into comics and stuff and kind of lost interest. And since I've become kind of more serious about like seeking out things outside of the mainstream and older stuff, Tomorrow's has really been a great source for that. Back Issue in particular is a magazine about comics of the 70s and the 80s. And sort of the 90s. Basically, if you're looking for articles, really amazingly in-depth articles about things as obscure as Marvel's Godzilla title, that will be covered.
It's not in there, is it?
I don't think Godzuki is, but the whole Godzilla thing with S.H.I.E.L.D. is in an issue.
Yeah, they definitely go in so in depth. I mean, amazing. I don't like subscribe to it or pick it up regularly, but whenever it's something that I am interested in. I mean, it's like the one thing I need. I don't need to read anything else other than that, you know.
Exactly.
You'll get enough out of it.
Yeah, I mean, there's more information packed in those things.
And I think it's really cool because a lot of the stuff that we talk about is stuff that happened before the comic press really got together the way it is today. And so, like, today you know the ins and outs of what's going on.
Almost to the detriment. In
your, in your favorite series. But these are all, you know, books and stories where, certainly just as a reader, I wanted to know why Airboy stopped at issue 50 and what Dixon had planned for the series after that. And, you know, this issue talks about Suicide Squad, another book I always really liked, and talks about the origins of that and how it got tied into Legends and everything like that that, you know, nobody really knew about before.
Right. It digs up the dirt.
Then you got Roy Thomas's alter ego there as well, which is probably the longest running.
He just writes that magazine from memory.
Oh yeah,
he just sits down. What am I going to talk
research,
about?
Research. I am the research.
The excellent companions, ridiculous. Like the All Star companions and the Justice League companion, and they're coming out with a Flash one.
Mm-hmm. Oh really?
And a Hawkman one.
Ooh. And the second God, you need a Hawkman companion.
Be 15 pages long and just like example after example of him being a dick.
But there's a Blue Beetle companion too.
Yeah,
for
the Blue Beetle
more obscure stuff and the Modern Masters series.
I love the Modern Masters,
where which features a different artist every edition is fantastic.
I probably buy more of those than anything else because they just do so much good
and
stuff.
You cry over them.
I do. Why can't
I be like this?
Why is Mike Allred so cool?
I think those are written by Eric Nolan Worthington or Worthen, something like that. I apologize, Eric.
That's it. You're out of a job.
We'll sweeten
Eric Nolan Worthington, and I think he's an exceptional interviewer. So
I just don't know how he can stand to talk to somebody that long.
A really long conversation.
Well, after sitting here, I'm beginning to think.
It's war of attrition. You have to sit and endure it.
You got more coming, but I tell you what, what's up? Let's go ahead and wrap this one up, and you guys are going to hear more from Eric in the future. We can't talk about it now, but you will. Real quick note before we finish up here. I definitely wanted to remind people that if you haven't seen on the internet, you haven't seen on our forum, Gene Colan is not in very good health right now, and there are a few different ways that you can help him. I'll just direct you to our forum. We have a sticky thread at the forum which kind of lays out different ways to help he and his wife Adrian, who are two of the absolute shining stars in this world. They're wonderful people, and Gene is I know Sal holds Gene in such high regard as I and Tom do. Go to the forum.
I think Sal does more.
You really connect with
Gene. I mean, I spent, you know, when we were in New York,
I saw you
last
give him a bear hug.
Yeah, I gave him a, I think my I worry now that I hurt him.
You picked him up and you're like, I love you.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. I mean, it really is, because I spent, you know, probably 2 hours with him in New York last year, just sort of, you know, this sort of intimate conversation with him that unfortunately we didn't tape. Unfortunately, the mic that wasn't working, mm-hmm. and we didn't get any. But he's very soft spoken as it is, but it was just a really, probably out of the 3 years that we've been doing the podcast, probably my favorite moment of anything that we've done was that time that I spent with Gene. One, I mean, I've always been a Daredevil fan and always been a fan of his work. But two, he's just truly a wonderful ambassador for comics.
He's a wonderful human.
Yeah,
being.
He really is just a great guy. And you know, it just really breaks my heart to hear that he's not doing well and that they're dealing with medical expenses that they can't afford because they don't have insurance. They don't, you know, he's a freelance artist. You know, these guys and you know, it's why organizations like Hero Initiative have to exist, because these guys, you know, when they get older and they have to deal with health problems, they don't have the finances to do it. So yeah, this one really you know,
hit home.
It really did. It really hurts, you know, to hear about this with Gene. And so yeah, we have it on our forum. There's going to be an auction at Comic Link where you can a bunch of artists, you know, the great artists have donated work that you can auction on, bid on, and that money will go to Gene and Adrian, and then there's a book that Gene collaborated with Clifford Method on that you can purchase, and all the proceeds mm-hmm. for that, or you can just PayPal directly to mm-hmm. the family.
the emails on our forum. So please please help them out because they really do deserve some help.
Absolutely. And to Marvel's credit, we just found out today that Marvel is stepping up and they're going to help out. We don't know to what extent.
Don't know the details yet, but it sounds like Marvel is going to step in and try and help them out as much as they can. I hope so.
So go help Gene if you can, and it is a perfect time to let you know that the Hero Initiative, that's why they are there. So if you are sympathetic to the needs of veteran creators out there that need your help, check out the Hero Initiative and keep Gene and Adrian in your thoughts and prayers. So on that note, we're going to wrap things up. Let you know, definitely you can contact the show by emailing us at info@aroundcomics.com or all the primaries at Sal@aroundcomics, Tom@aroundcomics, or Chris@aroundcomics.com. Leave us an iTunes review if you would, please. I really appreciate it. I'd like to thank everyone for being here today. Sal, great to have you back. Tom, I'm glad you made it back from Seattle.
Thank you.
We were worried about you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Eric, it's been a pleasure. Hopefully you'll come down from the Twin Cities again and join us.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, you guys.
All right. Well, everyone out there in podcast land, thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with another full-length episode of Around Comics. In the meantime...
In between time.
We'll be everywhere in...
And Around Comics. Passport photos.
Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production, copyright 2008.
Where Mrs. Buckley lives. Every July, peas grow there. Do you really mean that?
So in other words, I'd start half a second late.
Don't you think you really want to say July over the snow? Isn't that the fun of it?
If you make it almost when that shot disappears, it'll make my...
I think it's so nice that you see a snow-covered field and say every July, peas grow there. We know a remote farm in Lincolnshire where Mrs. Buckley lives. Every July, peas grow there. We aren't even in the fields, you see.
Yeah, we aren't.
We're talking about them growing, and she's picked them.
Yeah.
What?
In July.
I don't understand you, then. What must be over for July?
When we get out of that snowy field.
When I was out, we were onto a can of peas, a big dish of peas, when I said in July.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes, always. In July. I'm always past that. Yes. Well, that's about where I say in July.
Can you emphasize a bit in July?
Why? That doesn't make any sense. Sorry. There's no known way of saying an English sentence in which you begin a sentence with in and emphasize it. Get me a jury and show me how you can say in July and I'll go down on you.